This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
At the end, don't you, Tex?
Well, the listener, of course, can't see us, but thank goodness. But you really do start to get funking in that chair when you hear those little snippets of sound.
What can I do? What can I do? I just can't control myself.
That's right.
I just got a boogie. Yeah. But as we were saying before, we are taking this opportunity to do a bit of a catch-up on things that are happening in the news. And just let everyone know. And the first of all is going to be just a bit of an update on what's been happening in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, we'll cover a bit of an HIV research update. But one thing that I thought was particularly of interest is that the headline, I guess, is really just that a lot of UK therapists are still trying to convert gays and lesbians to becoming straight, according to a survey of UK mental health professionals. About 17% of the more than 1,300 therapists surveyed said they have helped at least one client to reduce gay or lesbian feelings. London-based researchers found in a survey published in the UK journal BMC Psychiatry, of those, 72% said clients should get a chance to redirect their feelings. Redirect their feelings.
Yeah, I know. It's a pretty strange concept, isn't it? When all those years ago, the American psychiatric societies finally decided that being gay and lesbian wasn't an aberration,
mm-hmm.
It's really weird that somewhere as enlightened, or as I like to think the United Kingdom as being enlightened, it's interesting that so many therapists actually decided that it's possible.
Now, I wonder, it's about 17% of the 1,300 therapists. Do you think that maybe it might be therapists that have been, are still kind of that thought that it is still a disorder?
They could be. Look, I would think, you know, maybe they're older. Mm. Older people who are still set in the mindset. But, of course, We only have to look into the news, into the popular media, search the internet. You can find lots of younger people who are still, who are psychiatrists, mm-hmm. and medical type people, who still consider that being gay and lesbian is something strange, mm. and something that needs changing.
Which it doesn't. But it kind of, I find it interesting because I often think of these kind of ex-gay programs as, you know, being directed by religious groups or whatnot. I think of the Queer as Folk episode where Emmett got kind of brought in to see the light, but to see actual therapists still going about that is alarming, but interesting nonetheless.
But quite interesting, of course, that only 4% of those surveyed said they would attempt to change a client's sexual orientation. So, you know, there's 17% who thought it was okay, but when you get down to it, only 4% of those who were surveyed said that they thought that they would actually attempt the change or to change someone's sexual orientation.
But it was actually mentioned as well that, you know, they appeared to take little account of the potential harm of applying treatments, you know, that have no evidence for efficacy. So, yes, while, you know, maybe 17% would attempt to redirect, and only 4 would actually try to change, redirecting or changing is still,
I know,
it still opens it up to creating a bit of harm for the
patient.
It's
pretty odd, but it's just unusual that, you know, such a considerably large number of people or psychiatrists actually thought, sure, let's go with it.
Interesting little bit.
Hmm. Now, Jason, we should actually, now I can't pronounce this word, so I'm going to let you do it.
Sculpture?
No. Idiot.
Lipoatrophy.
Lipoatrophy, thank you.
Lipoatrophy, which is kind of the disfiguration of
someone's face, and in particular around the cheeks, where
it's where areas of the body generally have fat deposits, and it moves around as a result of it can be as a variety of reasons, but quite often because of past HIV treatments.
But the interesting fact is that people who are living with this condition are actually eagerly awaiting the decision of the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee, who are actually deciding whether they will actually fund this treatment. and it's a facial. It's called a facial filler, and the name that they use is Sculptra. And it's the decision is coming as to whether it will be listed on this pharmaceutical benefit scheme. I've been on radio
too long. The PBS, PBS. But I guess facial filler meaning, you know, where there's some loss of body fat, so in the cheek, and like you can think of in the cheeks, which would affect someone's appearance and also their kind of well-being as well. And
indeed. And look, it's because Sculptra costs around $700 per vial, and a treatment may take around 4 vials, that's 2 for each cheek, and last up to 18 months. But the quality of the product and the frequency it's required can vary considerably between different patients. So for some people, it may be that it lasts for 18 months. Other people, that's $700 per vial, which is $1,400, $2,800, may only last for a much shorter time.
But I guess you kind of wonder as to whether or not they're kind of seeing it as strictly a cosmetic drug or seeing the actual benefits to the individual to have... an important aspect, let's face it, of one's appearance being somewhat restored.
And certainly the National Association of People Living with HIV/AIDS are naturally supporting this submission. And they've actually written a detailed impact statement on patients, including the proven need for such a support scheme and the successes that could be achieved as a result. I was interested that last year there was a special access program negotiated between the National Association of People Living with HIV/AIDS and Sanofi Aventis, and they provided free treatment to 200 people on limited incomes across the country, so all across Australia. But, you know, the fact that they're actually deciding at the moment whether it will go on to the pharmaceutical benefits scheme is something to keep an eye out for.
Indeed. And something that's a little bit more on the lighter side.
This is a bit oddball, Jason.
I know. Well, it is me that's going to be talking about it. But I thought it was quite interesting to hear that in the US, a man was jailed for sex with car wash vacuum. A man who police said was arrested for performing a sex act with a car wash vacuum has been sentenced to 90 days in jail and ordered to submit to drug testing. The 29-year-old man pleaded no contest to indecent exposure last month. Police said the man was arrested after a resident called officers. In October last year, police attended the location after a report of suspicious activity at a car wash near Detroit, Michigan. An officer approached on foot and caught the man in the act with the vacuum.
And well, that just sucks, really, doesn't it? It's strange. It does suck, indeed. It's really strange. I mean, you actually do hear about people who are taken to hospital because they've used a home vacuum cleaner. And I've heard of people who have made love, I don't think is quite the word, penetrated a exhaust of a car. I mean, people will try all sorts of silly things, won't they? But it's... And I loved that, you know, ordered to submit to drug testing. Oh, please, darling. I'd be sending her farther than drug testing.
Or a fleshlight.
Very, very unusual.
Anyhow, a little bit of information. And we've already got a message in from our, almost the well mascot, really, Glenda the Cat, who was rocking out to Rasheen Murphy. So glad to see that someone's enjoying the music.
Thanks, but, Glenda.
We're going to take a quick break to hear some messages from our Joy 94.9 sponsors and then be right back to talk about a little bit of stuff happening with HIV prevention campaigns here in Victoria. You are listening to Well on Joy 94.9. Oh, Tex, have I told you the way you make me feel?
You haven't recently, Jason, but go right ahead.
Well, I don't know if that would be appropriate on air, but, you know, I don't have to tell you.
Okay.
You keep telling me the sultry looks that I make really just don't work for you.
So. They don't. I'm sorry. I thought you'd be dedicating it to someone else.
You mean the sick one at home?
The sick one at home, Gary. I'll dedicate it to Harry as well, because that rhymes with
Gary and Harry. Yeah. That one goes out to Gary and Harry. Well, there you go.
Thanks.
There we go. No more mushy mushy. But before the break, we were talking about some kind of, most of them were serious, news briefs.
They were,
relating to health and HIV. And one item, this has actually been in the news as well this week in the latest issue of the Southern Star. And it's pertaining to HIV prevention campaigns that have been implemented here in Victoria. Now, you know, HIV prevention campaigns are often the target of much criticism when it's in the media.
Oh, indeed, are they? Well, in fact, much criticism wherever they are, whether it's a poster on a wall, yeah, a brochure that someone's got in their hands, or something, whether it's a billboard, a bus shelter, wherever.
Indeed. But the article in Southern Star this week has highlighted some recent data collected at this year's Midsummer Carnival by independent researchers at the Burnett Institute that showed that the current prevention campaigns appear to be getting the message across, which is quite quite a positive.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes you feel really good inside, especially on the work that we do in getting this information out and about. It's great to find out that people have actually seen it and take a notice and actually have had some recall on some of the messages as well.
And the two main campaigns that they looked at were the Drama Down Under, which is unique because it's had some broad exposure in mainstream and outdoor media, kind of in terms of billboards, tram and bus shelter advertising. Typically that known as that guy with the burning undies.
That's right, yes.
And the other campaign that they looked at was Protection, or protection.org.au, which is often commonly referred to as the porn campaign, or the campaign that used more sexually explicit images from adult movies.
That's right.
And that campaign had some print resources in the gay media, mm-hmm, as well as some educational resources and posters out in a variety of...
Well, indeed, yes. Men who visit sex on premises venues in and around Melbourne may have recalled, and in fact, the recognition factor was quite high on these campaigns. And these are images which have been displayed in poster format in sex on premises venues, and also as a small booklet. Mm-hmm. As well, it has sexually explicit material. But they've also been in the news media, MCV and Southern Star in particular.
As well as postcards that were distributed through
indeed,
the same venues.
Oh, yes, the postcards as well, which have been very popular. There are some venues around town that we have to almost restock fortnightly because the postcards and the booklet are so popular.
But not to get too biased, let's get back to the study. Mm-hmm. And again, this was done by the Burnett Institute. And they basically were recruited for the survey at Midsummer Carnival and got 212 participants. And the survey looked at a range of issues, and it looked at levels of recognition. So, you know, whether or not people actually remembered the images, and whether people could recall specific campaign messages, and beyond that, looking at whether the campaign actually had an effect on people's actually discussing the issues with friends, or discussing sexual risk taking,
mm-hmm,
and then even further looking at if it actually had any impact on their health behaviors. So, you know, obviously specifically in the case of Drama Down Under, and also with Protection, were people going and seeking testing? Were people becoming more aware of the need to use condoms and water-based lube when having anal sex? So a wide range of issues, and the results are quite impressive, really.
They are indeed, and it's interesting because the recognition factor was high. And what we mean by high is, if we think of the Drama Down Under campaign, which is the Burning Undies campaign, if you like, 85% of the people surveyed, of those 212 participants, actually had a recall, and they recognised images from the campaign. And slightly less, but still quite high, 72% of the people who were surveyed recognised the Protection campaign. So they had a recall of recognising images from the campaign. Which is quite a high recall.
Even 72% is still...
Indeed.
It's impressive, and 85 is kind of through the roof, really, when you think of the amount of advertising that we get bombarded with on a day-to-day basis. And it kind of begs the question as to whether, you know, do you think Drama was more effective because of the fact that it was a gay men's health campaign that wasn't only being implemented in typical gay media, so moved beyond just print...
And yeah, look, that's right. And I mean, effectively, as you said, we are bombarded with advertising material day in, day out, wherever you go, wherever you turn, whether you're driving, whether you're on public transport, where even turning the pages of a magazine. But that's the really important thing, that it was out and about in the community. Mm-hmm. And it had as its, you know, it was there, and it was also there with every other advertising campaign, whether it was for toilet paper or a popular soft drink. Mm. The recognition actually came through. People did remember seeing it, which is really interesting.
Well, and I think what's interesting or important to press as well is the fact that, you know, people weren't only recognizing the images that were presented from the campaigns, but were able to go a step further and actually recall campaign messages included in those in each of those campaigns. And as we said, you know, 85% of the people surveyed remembered, you know, seeing drama out and about. Mm-hmm. But 88%, almost 90% of those people were able to recall one of the messages that were incorporated into that campaign.
And, of course, this campaign was about sexually transmitted infections and the need to test, and reminding people that they need to test. So it's really interesting that 88% of people who were surveyed did recall the message, and the messages were along testing for specific sexually transmitted infections or just generally testing
and
itself.
With the protection campaign, which came with a lot of controversy in the community, because people were saying, you know, yes, you're trying to get people's attention, you're trying to shock people by using sex. Will people actually, you know, stop looking at the sexually explicit image and actually get the message? And the recall rate for the protection campaign was even higher than that of Drama Down Under. 91% of those who had recognized the protection campaign were able to then reiterate one of the messages.
Indeed, and it's interesting because, as you said, it was quite controversial. There were letters in the media, in the print media. There was letters and emails that were sent into the Victorian AIDS Council saying, basically, you know, you're just portraying gay men as people who, you know, sex. You're concentrating on sex. There's a lot more to life than just sex. But of course, the brief for this campaign was to speak to people or communicate with people about unprotected anal intercourse in casual settings. And really, if you think about it, there's really no way to do that, or probably the most successful way, and we've found that it was quite successful, is by showing an image of sex.
Mm. And I think, you know, working in health promotion, it's quite difficult. It's always talking about attempting to change people's behavior to be healthier behavior.
Indeed. Yeah.
And, you know, actually being able to see some evidence of behavior change through one particular project is really quite difficult. But some of the questions that they had asked in that survey was, as a result of seeing this campaign, did it prompt you to blah, blah, blah? One of the questions was, did it prompt you to visit a sexual health clinic? And with regards to Drama Down Under, which was specifically looking at encouraging people to get involved in regular sexual health checks, 26% of those individuals said that it did prompt them to visit a sexual health clinic. And also, one of the other questions was, did it prompt you to visit a GP clinic? And 20% had indicated that it did indeed.
Which is really quite encouraging. Mm. It's quite encouraging that a relatively high percentage of people actually go to a sexual health clinic. And if they went to a sexual health clinic, that predominantly means if they've gone to the clinic, they've gone to have a test. Mm. Or they've said to their GP, I'd like to have a test for sexually transmitted infections. Now, we can't know whether they had testing for all sexually transmitted infections, but one would assume that they've had testing for at least some of them.
It's very encouraging data altogether, and I mean, you know, one would hope that, as Dr. Mark Stuve from the Burnett Institute said, you know, we would hope that this would initiate a bit of a medium and long-term decline in sexual risk-taking behavior and ultimately in the notification of HIV and STIs as well.
And just to remind people, if they want to have a look at those campaigns online, it's thedramadownunder.info and protection.org.au.
And you're listening to Jason and Tex on WOWL and Joy 94.9. Take it back. That is not going to be taken back. That was for Jill, Strong Enough by Sheryl Crow. texting. I feel like I'm keeping you mute over there on that side.
Thank you. I'm better. Yes, and so, Jill, hope you're listening to the show and enjoying that.
Yes, and the next song I'm sure she'll enjoy as well. But as we were saying earlier, it's an update show, and not too long ago, the 16th International Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections was held in my hometown of Montreal, Canada. And was attended by close to 4,200 delegates. And as we did with the International AIDS Conference that was held last August in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
or Mexico City, I should say, there's some kind of highlights that are worthwhile going through.
Yeah.
You know, this conference is a bit unique because it brings together clinical investigators, scientists, researchers from all over the world to share knowledge and develop a greater understanding of managing HIV and opportunistic infection. So it's much more clinical in focus than the International AIDS conferences, but one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting, and really doesn't come as much surprise, is around risk factors regarding disease progression and health in general. And a number of medical conditions can nearly double the risk of death in people with HIV. But the good news is that most of these conditions are preventable or at least modifiable. The DAD study, which stands for the Data Collection on Adverse Events of Anti-HIV Drugs, has been collecting information on the risk factors affecting over 33,000 participants since 1999.
And I think that's really interesting. It's a really large sample group, 33,000 people.
Well, and it obviously takes quite a bit of time since it's been going on for 10 years.
Yes, indeed.
So, 33,000 participants, and some of them, some of these risk factors, such as age and gender, obviously, are you can't exactly change. No. As much as you try to look younger, you can't change your age. Right, Tex?
That's right, Jason. I know.
but a lot of others can at least be monitored, and lifestyles can be modified to reduce their effects. Some of these factors include, from the most adverse to the least, being being underweight,
mm-hmm.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, co-infection with hepatitis C, and arguably the most modifiable of them all, really, right, Tex?
That's right.
Being a smoker.
Yes.
Now, you know that last year I gave you lots of flack and was very, very keen to see that you had stopped smoking, but we're not going to get into that right now.
No, we won't.
No, we're not. But, of course, one of the additional ones, which wasn't too surprising, was that a low CD4 cell count and a high viral load were also identified as risk factors among the 33,000 participants that they'd been collecting data on since 1999. So, quite interesting, but all the more reason to kind of be having a chance to look at your lifestyle, look at your health habits with your health practitioner.
And look, as you said, you know, issues, as you said, they were the most adverse to being the least adverse, being underweight, diabetes. Now, there are people who will argue that you can, through health, you can reduce diabetes to when diabetes is almost non-existent. Mm-hmm. But of course, most of the doctors that I've spoken to, and I'm a diabetic myself, have said that, well, in my case, you know, I don't use insulin, but eventually I will have to use insulin. Eventually the medicines just, you know, the drugs won't work. Mm. High blood pressure, it's possible to work on your blood pressure.
Through diet and exercise.
Through diet and exercises. Smoking, of course, it is possible for people to give up smoking. But for a lot of people, especially people living with a chronic illness, it's, if you like, a pleasure, mm-hmm. Which they don't see as being necessary for them to give up.
Well, it's finding that balance as well. There's things that we can do quite easily, and things that are a little bit more challenging, and kind of balancing the stress involved with those challenging things with the benefit.
And, of course, it's working with your health professional or health professionals and the different organisations that it's... of course, we talk quite a lot about the organisation People Living with HIV AIDS Victoria, who indeed do a quit smoking course as one of those ways to help reduce.
We might take another quick break. The show's just flying by, Tex.
Where's the show gone?
We blabber on way too easily. But you're listening to WellOL on Joy 94.9. And just after the break, we're going to have a quick update on things that are happening in and around the community that are related to keeping you healthy. Stay tuned. Bex, you're loving my musical selections this week, aren't you?
Well, Jason, sometimes I don't. And tonight I have actually enjoyed everything you've played, so I'm quite impressed. And that last track, that was an Australian track?
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. She's been performing at the Brunswick Festival? Brunswick Music Festival? I'm still learning things here in Australia. But she had that show, and she's got a couple more happening around Melbourne in the coming months. So,
well, that's someone to watch out for.
Mm-hmm. Get your tickets now, Tex.
We'll do, Jason.
But as always, we take great pride in our segment where we let you know about things that are happening around the community that either are all about health, about community health issues, or little workshops and whatnot that can help keep you a healthy individual.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the first of which is something that's been discussed quite a bit on Joy, because it'll be broadcast live on Joy this March 29th, so that's this coming Sunday at 7 p.m. at Circuit, and, of course, live on Joy 94.9. It's a community forum called Ifs and Buts, The Raw Truth About Barebacking. Join gay porn director Chichi LaRue and Titan Man exclusive star Marco Blaze for this essential debate. Panelists include Keith Webb, the vice president of Titan Media, Fiona Patton of the Eros Foundation and also of the Australian Sex Party, and Mike Kennedy, the executive director of the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Center. I know that Chichi LaRue was just recently on interviewed by Doug and the team at the Rainbow Report.
That's right, yes.
And I think she's had a few other interviews on around gay Melbourne. She's
a few appearances in a number of venues. So, mm-hmm. Yes, it's. I think this is going to be a really interesting event to attend, and Circuit Bar is at 103 Smith Street in Fitzroy, so just around the corner from Gertrude Street. But it should be really interesting. I'm going along because I'm really interested to hear what they have to say. This Marco Blaze, the Titan Men porn star, and Chichi LaRue make safe sex porn.
Mm-hmm.
Like a number of other companies, including the company, the images that we use from Hot House Media. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really interesting to hear them talk, and to hear the vice president of Titan Media talking about their decision to make safe sex porn, and also to hear from Fiona Patton from the Eros Foundation and the Australian Sex Party, as you said, and of course our executive director Mike Kennedy. We've heard him many times, but it'll be interesting to hear him again.
I think it'll provide an interesting discussion around, you know, there's the issue of does providing that kind of media fantasy around barebacking, does that kind of play out in people engaging in more unprotected sex, but then also the issue of the safety of the performers in the films as well.
Yes, indeed. So that should be a really interesting event. And as you said, Jason, if people can't get to Circuit Bar to see this event in person, they can hear it as it's being simulcast on Joy 94.9, and it will start at 7 p.m. sharp.
Mm-hmm. Now, just a quick question. Is Sundays the day at Circuit where women are allowed in?
That's right.
So women can attend the event?
Yes, indeed.
That's fantastic. Next up.
Yes, there are new dates for the next Phoenix Workshop. And the Phoenix Workshops, run by people living with HIV/AIDS Victoria, are for people who are newly diagnosed. And in this instance, newly diagnosed means within the last 2 years. These are workshops for men, gay men, same-sex attracted men. And this workshop has previously been... It was to be run this month, but it's actually been changed to April. So it's on Friday. It starts on Friday, the 24th of April, and that's for an introductory session. It's 7 at night till 9. And then on the Saturday, the 25th, and Sunday, the 26th of April, the sessions go from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And what they do is they establish a nice confidential safe space where you can talk about what it's like to have been recently diagnosed and to find out a whole host of information about how you can protect yourself and how you can look after yourself health-wise. Now, if you'd like more information or to register for this workshop, the Phoenix Workshop, you can contact Vic at People Living with HIV AIDS Victoria on 9865 6772. That's 9865 6772.
We actually had a guest on the show last week who is a peer education facilitator with the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Center. But they're conducting facilitation training from the 18th of April to the 27th of May of this year. Now, this is something that happens, I think, once every 2 years.
Once every 2 years, yes.
So, an opportunity not to be missed if you are interested in getting involved with peer education. And they're looking for highly motivated gay men from all ages and all cultural backgrounds to participate. Now, peer education program at the Victorian AIDS Council is part of the health promotion program, and they run groups such as Young and Gay, Momentum, and Relationships.
And they also have the group Gay Asian Proud. Indeed. As well. And we talk about these groups quite often, and we, especially when we're telling you when the groups are starting, and they start about every 6 weeks at least. And they're groups that run for 6 weeks, but this actual group is for the people who facilitate the groups. So you get training, and it's quite an intensive training course where you learn how to facilitate the groups, how to work with people. So it helps if you've been involved in one of the groups before, but it's not absolutely essential. It's really interesting. And who's the contact for that?
The contact for that is Asvin at the Victorian AIDS Council, and his number is 9865 6700.
Indeed. And talking about the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre, very, very exciting. This year is the 25th anniversary of the founding of the organisation. So this year we're having a 25th birthday picnic. And you know what, Jason? Everyone is invited.
Oh, fantastic.
So if you have been affected by HIV/AIDS, whether you're a previous staff member, whether you're a previous volunteer, a client of the organisation or a friend of the organisation, you've attended one of the events that the organisation has run over the many, many years, well, the 25 years of the organisation, you too are invited to our 25th anniversary birthday picnic. And it's happening on Sunday, the 5th of April, from 1 p.m. And it's in Faulkner Park, the northwest corner. Now, lots of people will know Faulkner Park in South Yarra. I think it's listed as South Yarra. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be champagne, cake, and entertainment. And I was talking to Carolyn Warren, our fundraising officer, today, and she was telling me about some of the entertainment. It's going to be quite fun.
Indeed.
And the first president of the organisation, Phil Carswell, will be coming down from Queensland, where he now works. And so he's really excited about coming down. So this is going to be your opportunity to catch up with people who have been involved in the organisation or who are still actively involved in the organisation. And I'm looking forward to going to it, Jason, because I've been involved for quite a few years.
Tell us how long.
Well,
are you going to?
In July this year, it will be the 20th anniversary of the first time I walked in the door of the Victorian AIDS Council as a volunteer. And next month, I think it's on the 9th of next month, it'll be my 15th anniversary as an employee, a permanent employee of the organisation.
Fantastic.
The dinosaur of the organisation, as now, Colin, our manager, says.
Don't say that.
And he does.
It's great having you around with lots of knowledge of the history of the organisation.
So. And one of the good things is I've been looking through the archives of the organisation, digging up old photos.
Of you?
I found some rather strange and frightening photos of myself, but I found lots of good photos of other people, including the first peer education group. There's photos from the very first peer education group that was run, and it was quite a big group. I think it was, from the look of the photo, it would have been 40 to 50 men. Nowadays, the groups are more manageable size of about 12 participants, but it should be a fun day, and there's going to be a timeline where you can place yourself on the timeline.
Oh, fantastic. It should be a great day.
Yeah.
Well, sadly, it's time to
wrap. Come on. It's not time to go.
Tex, it's been so much fun having you back that time has just flown by.
And you know what? I'm going to be back next week with Kylie.
You are, because I'm going to be taking a few weeks off on leave.
Now, where are you going
to
be going?
I'm going to Vietnam.
Oh.
I'm going to Nam. Mm. Which is very exciting, because I've never been. This is going to be my second time in Asia, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
That should be fun. Well, remember, lovely, lovely presents, you know, always make us smile.
Well, you know, I treated you quite well when I got back from Canada.
Indeed. I look forward to being treated just as nicely.
But, of course, coming up next is the ever-so-lovely Liz with the Fruit and Nut Show. And she's got a dirty threesome, as always.
She is a dirty girl. She likes to do a threesome every week. And this week, she's having a threesome with the Pet Shop Boys. So that should be exciting.
I wonder if that's going to have any indication of some goodies that she's got to give away this show as well. Oh,
it may well be. So, listen, continue listening and continue keeping your dial locked to Joy 94.9.
Of course. But we've got to say a big thank you to everyone that's messaged in, the lovely Glenda the Cat and the fantastic Simone.
Thanks, Simona. Yes, I want to say a quick hello to Simona, to say hi to Warren, to Paul and Doug, and especially to Harry.
Aww.
And you want to say hello to the sickie?
Oh, say hello to the sickie, Gary. I'm going to have to go take care of him right now.
What's the last song tonight?
The last song is Man Eater by Nelly Furtado, one of my very own Canadian girls.
Really? Mm-hmm. And song that could sum you up.
Clearly, Liz from Fruit and Nut is a fan, and I think it's the right tone of song to get everyone reared up and boogieing for the fantastic Fruit and Nut Show. So stay tuned, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers, everyone. Good night. Bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.